now pay attention.
Blog Talk Radio.
What's happening, and tonight is Tuesday, April the 18th, 2017. And this evening we are saying, an anatomy of oppression requires an anatomy of colonialism, imperialism, and an anatomy of the American capitalist system. And this evening we will be discussing the audacity of this country to talk about mother bombs. And we're saying who they test these mother bombs on is the issue. Who they use as an excuse for bombing is an issue. But we are also saying tax laws that allow the rich to get richer while the middle class carries the tax burden is the real issue. And tonight, we're going to open up, as we usually do, with our dear brother Ralph Poynter in the house.
Thank you, Sister Betty. Brothers and sisters, the overriding element in every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. Black lives have never mattered except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our labors for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black. Move lynching indoors. The police says the army of occupation have taken lynching outside again. The lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media. And because the lives of our heroes and sheroes who once protected us in our community do not matter to us, the people, our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds as well as the minds of others. Wake up. Now is the time. And without much ado, we're going to go straight to our poet in residence. Ready?
Hello?
Brother Matt,
hello?
Your mic is open.
Oh, okay. This piece is called Moab, Mother of All Business Steals. When I hear mother, my nostrils widen with black breathes of black pepper, greens, beets, turnips, pinto beans and pots on a copper tone stove top. Shrapnel of sweet potato pies and cornbread from an oven. When I hear mother, my hands recall being dropped off with two reams of flyers, going door to door, calling for picketing meetings for freedom. When I hear mother, my ears revisit Saturday mornings of muted miles, beckoning to bacon, eggs, toast, potatoes, and waffles. When I hear mother, my heart's warmed by flashbacks, fierce hugs punctuating bedside talks, guiding me through grass roots, killing fields, city of angels. When I hear mother, I hear a silver shovel biting, breaking ground for a medical school and hospital. Mother ferociously fought for, not death rattles, trade show noise of bombs.
Okay, well, we're getting another interpretation of mother, the mother of all bombs, and the question that were raised by Sister Betty are very real. That is, who they test these bombs on and what excuse they use for bombing. And so we have had that issue, the bombings, the gas bombings, and the big bombs, the little bombs, many bombs, rockets, etc. And let us hear what some people have who have been watching this, what some people have to say about this situation that we are lapsing into, and if there is a glow of hope on the horizon coming from America. And so this evening, I would like to switch to Larry. Are you in the house to tell us what you think of what's going on today?
Yes, I'm in the house. Thank you very much, Brother Ralph, Sister Betty, Sister Professor Betty. I want to say, and I want to be very brief, I'm sure there are others who are waiting to get on. Let me say that let's understand that the United States is not a novice. It's not new at war, you know, at bloodshed and war. When we talk about bombs, let's understand that in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, people are still dying as a result of the bombs that were dropped by the United States on the civilian, two civilian population of Nagasaki and Hiroshima. So this is really, it's really nothing new. Perhaps the only thing of interest is that the media would dare to use the term mother. Well, I know back in the day when we used the term mother, it had a totally different meaning. I think that what we're just looking at is basically, metaphorically speaking, you know, Dr. Frankenstein, or Frankenstein's monster, whatever way you want to look at it. But the bottom line is that people are still being murdered by the U.S. and other countries. And these murders are carried out all in the name of the people of this country, which we know to be a farce. We know it to be untrue. We know it is absolutely unacceptable. It's not being done as a result of our, that is to say, everyday, ordinary, black, white, brown, red, and yellow people support. It's being done despite what we, the people in this country, may believe. So I would urge all of us to bear in mind that the so-called mother of all bombs, and of course it's really, even they admit it's really not, because this was a non-nuclear bomb. It was the largest non-nuclear bomb ever dropped in combat. quote-unquote, combat. So in any event, as we speak, U.S. warships, submarines, aircraft carriers, destroyers, et cetera, are headed towards Korea, the Korean Peninsula. And the drums of war are beating. And I'm going to say what I said, I believe, last week. No matter how people may think that there can be a control, this can be controlled. Let me remind everyone, that it only takes one mistake, one misstep, just one, and it's on. And when I say it's on, I'm talking about thermonuclear war. And if you think you can live through a so-called nuclear winter, be my guest. I don't think we can. And so we should be doing everything we can at home, quote unquote, home, to be decrying what is happening in our name. Now, having said all of that, I want to end by saying what I should have begun by saying, and that is free all of our political prisoners. Free them now, all of them. If we had them in our communities, perhaps there would be a higher rate of consciousness in our communities. Perhaps. One thing is for sure, if we had them in our communities protecting us, and I don't mean just protecting us physically, but I mean psychologically. We're under attack. Everyday ordinary people are under attack by the vomit stream media, by the so-called mainstream media. So we must free our political prisoners. We must let them know that we have not forgotten them, that they are us and we are them. So I'm not going to belabor this and go on and on. I thank you. Brother Ralph, I understood that you wanted me to, I don't know if it was me that you wanted me to read from a portion of an article from 2007, but if you want me to do so, just let me know, and I'm ready. But for now, I'll sign off. Well, I'm not signing off, but for now, I'll end and allow someone else to come on. Thank you. All power to the people.
Thank you, Brother Larry. We will email you. What we are saying is, as everybody knows by now, I hope, that's listening to our broadcast this evening, this Saturday from 2 to 7 at St. Peter's Church on the corner of Lexington Avenue and 54th Street in New York City, Manhattan, there will be a celebration of our sister warrior, Lynn Stewart. And what we're saying is excerpts of that article will be read for the memorial, and you will be listed in the program accordingly. We wanted to alert you to that fact and to thank you for reminding us of that article.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
And I hope that you'll come back and give us a discussion of the so-called political leaders that we have and the shenanigans and games that they're playing as you have been organizing in your community. We will get back to that hopefully later on. But for now, Brother Ralph wants to announce our next two speakers who are coming up.
Okay, Tariq and Ann, be ready. And we're going to go right to Tariq that we cut off last week, and we promised him because in explaining our situation, Mr. Tariq, you in the house.
Peace, Brother Ralph, I'm here. And I want to say peace to Sister Betty Davis and peace to Sister Ann Lamb. Peace to the other contributors, and thank you all for having me. I am Tariq. I am a Black Panther. I am a former Black Liberation Army prisoner of war. I spent 17 years in various American concentration camps. And tonight I wanted to talk about the mother of all bombs. As you know, recently the United States dropped a one-of-a-kind 22,000-pound bomb on Afghanistani insurgents. American military representatives said use of the bomb was necessary because Afghan insurgents had resorted to using underground tunnels and bunkers in carrying out their guerrilla warfare. U.S. officials said the bomb had a one-mile killing radius. One of the so-called use of the so-called mother of all bombs shows that American officials refuse to draw a line that they will not stop at in their efforts to force regime change on other countries. American officials thought that use of satellite surveillance, infrared imaging, and use of other modern electronic devices would scare the impoverished Afghan insurgents into surrendering. Not so. Use of the bomb was more of a test run on live human beings. Sadly, it was reported that more than 300 persons were killed in the blast. The larger goal was to communicate to Afghan and Syrian insurgents that resistance is futile. Additionally, use of the bomb was to communicate to the people of the Democratic Republic of North Korea that the United States has in its arsenals bombs more devastating than those used during the Korean War. During that war, the United States dropped more bombs than they had in World War II, and doing so practically reduced the whole of North Korea to a pile of rubble. Fortunately, present-day Koreans, like their foreparents, who they recently honored in the person of the founder, Kim Jong-il, did not buckle under the heavy-handed threats from the United States. Our brothers and sisters in Afghanistan and Syria also have not come running out of their hiding places to surrender to the American authorities. As the co-founder of the Black Panther Party once said, the people's will is greater than the man's technology. Having that mindset is what will enable loving people to free themselves from the forces of insanity. And we are winning. Power to the people. Free all of our political prisoners, our prisoners of war. And we have to know that Trump, and behaving the way he is personifying on a macro level the micro individual racist in mid-America. And that's all he's doing is acting. And it was reported on the news today that those warships that he said was headed towards North Korea, they was headed in the other direction. It came on the news today. So he is just acting, personifying on an international, international level, the American individual races. That's what's going on. So we don't have to worry about, we're not going to get blown up. The world is not going to come to an end. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much for that. And when you speak of bombing, it is hard to think of any place other than Vietnam. Bomb them, they gas them. You attack them, and the reason they attacked them was to steal their resources, to control their country. But the will of the Vietnamese people proved that it was greater than any weaponry. And they're still dying and still recovering from that, but it is their country, and they have lived an example for people around the world to follow. And without continuing, pass it on to Sister Betty.
I just want to remind people that we're not saying they're incapable of mass murder. We're just saying which is the biggest contradiction, their love of genocide or their love of capitalism. And I think at some point we're going to have a real discussion about that. However, before we pass the mic to our dear Shiro and sister Ann Lam, I want to remind you that April 22nd at St. Peter's Church from 2 to 7, we hope you'll be there to celebrate Lynn. This will be streamed on Facebook. Again, it will be streamed on Facebook. And the second date I want to remind you is April 24th, Monday. You got to be ready to pack the court to win freedom for Mamiya Abu-Jamal at the Criminal Justice Center, Filbert Street in Philadelphia. That's 1303 Filbert Street in Philadelphia. The court hearing is from 9 to 4 p.m., and there are buses that will be leaving. You can get on the Jericho website. You can get on the Fremomia website and get the telephone numbers to call if you're leaving from New York City. And without further ado, I want to acknowledge that Sister Ann is with us tonight.
Well, thank you so much, Sister Betty. Well, I have some disturbing news. Aside from this whole conversation, which is very interesting, I think the capitalism and the genocide go together. The one requires the other. That's just my own personal. I got a letter from one of Jan. Yeah, I think we got a letter from one of Jan's supporters. This is how we found out that Jan Lahman is in the hole. So in a letter dated April, and wait till you find out why. All right. So this is a letter he dated April 3rd to a supporter, an international supporter, and then she scanned it in and sent it to us. So I'm excerpting from his letter. I'm just now able to answer your letter because I am in segregation, the hole, since my birthday, March 21st. Yes, it was not a very nice birthday. Only last Friday was I finally able to buy some paper envelopes and stamps, so I have been writing letters since then. Okay, the reason they threw me into seg was because of a short message of support I wrote for International Women's Day was printed in a magazine, New York City ABC Update. Also, I had put together an obituary for our dear friend Lynn Stewart that I think was also printed in the same magazine. Right? He's a subscriber to this magazine, so he gets sent this magazine every time it comes out. I believe it's a monthly update. So the magazine came in the mail to the prison, and they locked me up. It's pretty absurd, crazy. I mean, I've been writing observations about the world and USA events since I was first captured, and I've been doing it here for the last 8 years also. So there's something else going on now. Ever since they shut down all my email last year, they've been trying to silence me. Now there's even more going down. This might be a plan to send me to some kind of lockdown control unit type prison. They are certainly trying to test me. Maybe they figure I'm getting old and too tired to resist. Well, old I am getting, haha, but I'm not too tired. In the meantime, I am in a seg cell writing you a letter. I have almost no access to a phone in here. I was able to get a legal visit last Friday, so I've discussed all this with my lawyer, and people outside are now becoming aware of what is happening to me. The actual charge against me is, this is the charge against him for writing something about International Women's Day and the night's piece that he wrote for Lynn. Threatening the security of the prison. He has been charged with threatening the security of the prison. I have to go to a disciplinary hearing. They might take their time before I go before this hearing. I mean, I should be found not guilty. But like I said, there's more going on than what is being said. In the meantime, I have no idea what is happening in the world. I have not seen or heard the news since March 21st. While here in SEG, where things are strange, I am numbering all my mail. This is number one to you from SEG. Not much space in here, but I've been doing some yoga every day and some meditating too. Take care. For freedom and justice, Jan. So then I say, please take the time to write to Jan and let him know he's in our hearts and on our minds. It's especially important that he receive as many letters as possible at this time. That's Jan Carl Lahman, number 10372-016, USP Tucson, P.O. Box 24550, Tucson, Arizona, 85734. Of course, his address is on jerichony.org. People can go to the prisoner's page. I would encourage everybody to write to Jan. This is outrageous that this is, quote-unquote, threatening the security of the prison. And I spoke with Jalil the other day. I read him this letter. He called, and he said, wow, they really are cracking down on our First Amendment rights, right? So this is very true. We've had a series of prisoners, you know, being totally thrown into the hole for expressing, you know, their opinions about things. They are supposed to be allowed to express their opinions according to the so-called Constitution, howsomever, a lot of that stops at the walls. So this is serious. You know, this is, you know, he has been quite a target for a while because he does put out the Four Struggle mag, and they know about that, I'm sure. And the government knows about that. So, you know, once they took away his email so he couldn't send out things by email or receive things by email, all of which is totally monitored anyway. And now just for him writing something that then came back to them because he received the magazine and, you know, they saw that he had written these couple of things, and so they throw him in the hole. So this is really serious. Our friend Bill Dunn, the last time that he was denied parole, he's also in the feds, he got a 15-year hit, and they made it, and he is appealing it, they made it very clear in what they said that the reason he got the hit was because he has not changed his political ideas. They said, oh, you're supported by such people as the Anarchist Black Cross Federation, and you have not changed the way you think. Well, I don't think that he's in prison for the way he thinks, although that's going to be happening, I'm pretty sure, very soon. We will be in prison for the way we think. It's very serious stuff, you know. I mean, you're not supposed to be being thrown into prison, thrown into the hole, you know, all this kind of stuff, just because of your political beliefs. So, you know, this is real serious.
And
this is what's happening to everybody now.
For a long time, we've been talking about the thought police.
Exactly.
Now,
the thought police. There's also
for
the
real,
dream police.
The thought prison.
The thought prison.
And I
want to
remind
police.
People of what Larry Pinkney said. If these
yes.
brothers were out here, our society could be transformed, and they know that.
Yes, that's exactly the point. They are
himself. These brothers mm-hmm. understand the nature of oppression and what to do about it, and they were
Absolutely.
Successful. That's why
yes,
they
were.
Don't want them out here with us. Remember what Larry said. But without further
they
ado.
Also, one more thing, just to that same point that Larry was making, is the same point that, you know, I've been making, and the same point a lot of us have been making for a long time, which is that the state, as little as they want to ever say that they're afraid of anything, you know, it's always hatred and retribution and revenge and all this stuff. No, what it really is fear. They are afraid of the ideas of our political prisoners. That is their true fear. They are so afraid of the ideas of our political prisoners, they want to bury them away, never let them out, never let them communicate with anybody, and hopefully, in their view, have them all die in prison. So, you know,
I want to claim
really
rank
serious.
Here.
Yeah, go
and
ahead.
Remind that a document going all the way back to Greek philosophers, Plato
mm-hmm.
wrote something called Crito, C-R-I-T-O, and it was about
right.
the death of Socrates. And they feared
yeah.
his ideas. And they said
yep.
to Socrates, well, why don't you escape? And Socrates says, no, I'm not going to escape, because then I would compromise the importance of my moral position. And these
mm-hmm.
brothers could get out if they would recant, if they would take back, if they would show remorse. But they won't
mm-hmm.
recant, because they will not compromise the truth and the reality that we have to fight against oppression. These are our true saints. If I were religious, these are the ones I would have religious holidays for. Without further ado, Brother Tom, you're in the house. And Brother Richie, hang in there.
Yes, I am in the house. This is Tom. Yes, some of my friends have become so they think that there's nothing that will stop the plutocracy mm-hmm. here in this country, that they are so blinded by their power and their wealth that nothing will stop them, and they will actually lead us into a nuclear war in Korea. However, Vice President Pence was on TV today, and he made a statement in which he said that that the United States is going to keep up the pressure on North Korea to denuclearize it, to force the North Koreans to do what we want them to do. And he used two words, but he left out a very important word. He said economic pressure and diplomatic pressure, that we're going to increase the economic and diplomatic pressure. But he didn't use the word military. And I think the reason is because although the United States is still the military superpower of the world, it is no longer the economic superpower of the world.
Right.
And so we have a situation where countries like China and Russia, the European Union, even countries like Brazil and India, they have developed an economy that is in direct competition, and we do not have total control over the world markets. And so when Trump met with the Chinese premier in Florida, he came out of that meeting and he sounded a little more conciliatory. I think that he realizes, and one of the previous speakers on this blog pointed this out, that you cannot control the world just by military power. You cannot force. There is nothing greater than the people united. And that's what's happening throughout the world. That's what's happening in the Middle East. We can destroy the infrastructure of Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, Libya, Somalia, and Yemen. And we can destroy whatever governments they had there. But despite all of our technological weapons, drones, super bombs, somebody mentioned this incredible super bomb that killed everyone within a diameter of a mile. Can you imagine? What is a mile? Well, here in New York City, a mile would be, say, from 125th Street to 145th Street. One bomb destroying all of those people. You can do, so our government can do this, but as was pointed out on the blog tonight, you cannot destroy the will of these people. And that's the problem that I hope that the ruling elite is beginning to realize. And so it's true that these people are so blinded by their arrogant power and wealth that nothing seems to deter them from just slaughtering hundreds of thousands of people and causing 5 million people to flee into Europe, and that's causing all kinds of problems in Europe. Nothing seems to deter them. And I hope that, however, it is not good for business. It is not good for the people that control this country are the big, big banks and the big corporations. And it's not good for business to let this thing get out of control into some kind of a nuclear war in the Far East. Now, some people might say that these people are so blinded that they don't give a damn. They'll take the risk. I hope this is not true. I recommend this book. It's called The Gods of Money, written by William Engdahl, Engdahl, and he traces continual attempt of big bankers from the founding of this country to today in controlling our economy, the money supply, how much money is to be printed, what the money is to be spent upon. And so nothing really has changed, because as I always say, this country was never a democracy, and it could never be a democracy as long as we have a capitalist plutocracy. But I do hope, and maybe I'm being naive, that even this plutocracy is not going to indulge in some kind of a nuclear holocaust in the Far East.
Well, thank you for that, Tom. And when we talk about nuclear holocaust, what we have to remember is that the United States has more nuclear bombs than everyone else combined. And the Korean and Iranian statements on nuclear weapons are, we must have nuclear weapons to defend ourselves against an aggressive America. No one can argue with that. And as I put simply, if there is a group of Klansmen down the block with guns, I want to have two. Mm-hmm. Somebody else says they want to have two in defense of themselves. Who can say me? And so America has created a situation where everyone else must have nuclear weapons as a defense, a proven need for defense against an aggressive nation. But if we look on the other hand and say, what's more important, bombs or money? I said to someone today, well, if they go to war with China, they'll have to close Walmart. And so, you know, will they close Walmart? What is going to happen here? And so we're always balancing, you know, those elements. I would just like to say
one short sentence. Despite the fact that this country has destroyed the infrastructure, has brought untold deaths and destruction to Afghanistan, to Syria, to Yemen, to Iraq, to Libya, despite all of this, we do not control those countries. We do not control those countries.
That's
the reality.
And as one of the things that people say, what goes around comes around. And that coming around is something that must be recognized. It could happen here. And it's a reality that people in America must be aware of. And I'm aware of it. All of we people on the shorelines in New York and California, Oregon, Maine, Florida, we have to be aware of that reality. But if they continue destroying the atmosphere and the water and the weather, maybe we'll all be flooded out before anybody can throw a bomb. But with that said, Sister Betty?
One of the reasons we're leaving your mics open is we do want you to interject, because we know you've all fought this conversation through many, many, many times before, especially those of us who lived through the Cuban so-called missile crisis, which was really a JFK crisis. But I would like to open our mic for Brother Richie, our resident anarchist who's in the house, and remind him that we need time to get back to many of our presenters this evening. I think an experience that Brother Larry had recently is very educational in terms of the kind of institutional structure that we have in this country that makes it a plutocracy. So, Brother Richie, your mic is open, and everybody else, your mics are open, so try to control your background noise.
Hello, everybody. How is everybody doing? I'm looking forward
to
Saturday.
We're doing fine.
And I want to remind people of the anarchists that in the 1900s that were hung, and I hope we all remember their names and remember what May Day is really about and what it should be about. August Spies, Albert Parsons, Adolf Fischer, George Engel, and another anarchist martyr that kill themselves before they can hang them. There was a song written for Zachary Vanzetti by Woody Guthrie called Two Good Men. I thought I'd play at least a minute of it for everybody to comment on it. And also, I have written letters to the political prisoners you've mentioned, and they never give them the letters. They always send them back to me. You know what I do with those letters? They go right back. I did a
yes,
Lynn Stewart strategy on them. And I know that's the only way I deal with that is every letter they send back, I send 10 letters back.
Yes.
To drive them crazy.
And I will,
that's
I
my
will tell brief,
strategy of war with those idiots.
I will tell you a brief story after Richie finishes the song by Woody Guthrie.
I think you'll enjoy it. I'll just play a minute, but I think it's appropriate for this upcoming mandate and who to educate people about Zachary Vanzetti. So, Ken, Ralph, I'll wait for you to say what you're going to say, and I'll play it.
Go ahead.
Okay, I'll play it now.
Go ahead.
It's Woody Guthrie. He wrote this in the 30s for Zachary Vanzetti. Tell me if you can hear it.
Did you hear the news? Psycho worked a tremendous shoes. Vanzetti was a peddling man, pushed his fish cart with his hand. Two good men a long time gone. Two good men a long time gone. Psycho and Vanzetti are gone. They left me here to sing this song. Psycho's born across the sea, somewhere over in Italy. Vanzetti born, appearance fine, drank the best Italian wine. Psycho sailed the sea one day, landed up in the Boston Bay. Vanzetti sailed the ocean blue and landed up in Boston too. Two good men's a long time gone. Two good men's a long time gone. Two good men's a long time gone. Left me here to sing this song. Psycho's wife, three children had. Psycho was a family man. Vanzetti was a dreaming man. His book is always in his hands. Psycho earns bread and butter, being the factory's best shoe cutter. Vanzetti spoke both day and night, told the workers how to fight. Two good men a long time gone. Two good men a long time gone. Two good men a long time gone.
Able to hear that,
gone.
Everybody?
Let me hear you sing this song.
Should I play more or let cut it short? I wanted to get the drift of the song to people.
Yes.
And I wanted to read just one thing because I know other people want to talk about. One of the Haymarket and one is at Warhung. I think this is one of the most militant Lynn Stewart-like, Mamiya-like statement before you're about to be hung by the enemy I've ever heard. I repeat that this is Louis Ling, one of the people of the Haymarket and Myers that were hung, probably the most militant anarchist of the people they hung. And I think this is the most armed words I've ever heard in my life. And I think this is right up what you would like, Ralph. I repeat that I am the enemy of the order of today, and I repeat that with all my power, so long as breath remains in me, I shall combat it. I declare again, frankly and open, I am in favor of using force. I have told Captain Schalk, I stand by it. If you abandon us, we shall dynamite you. You laugh? Exclamation point. Perhaps you think you'll throw no more bombs. Well, let me assure you, I die happy on the gallows, so confident am I the hundreds and thousands of whom I have spoken will remember my words, and when you shall have hung us all, mark my words, they will do the bomb throwing. In this hope, I do say to you, I despise you. I despise your order, despise your laws, your force, prop authority, hang me for it. Exclamation point. Before he was hung. And these are people that I think Lynn Stewart would agree, actually believe in self-defense.
Definitely.
Even to the last minute.
Definitely. And that reminds me of Kwesi Balogun, one of our modern-day...
Can you tell everybody who that is?
One of our modern-day members of Defenders of Justice in America. He was a member of the Black Liberation Army. He helped free Asada, and at his sentencing, he told the judge that they hadn't built a prison yet that could keep him. He died in Attica of AIDS. But he was defiant to the end. And I see, thank you for that, Richie, and I see Brother Ralph Schoenman is online. Ralph, do you have something for us this evening?
Well, Ralph, I thought we ought to take a look at the repeated statements by Pence, the vice president, and other Trump functionaries that, quote, their era of strategic patience is over and all their options are on the table. They're spelling out a really serious threat of nuclear war and nuclear weapons with the death of millions. Just in the past 2 weeks, they've been emphasizing how they're prepared to go much further than they've ever gone before. Quote, North Korea would do well not to test our resolve or the strength of the armed forces of the United States in the region. And what they're boasting about is the military aggression, first a cruise missile attack on Syria on April 7th, and later in Afghanistan, this massive ordnance air blast bomb, the Moab bomb, which is effectively the most destructive weapon they've unleashed anywhere since the incineration of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And it's not hard to read the meaning of this. It's an ultimatum. And with the naval strike group led by this nuclear power aircraft, USS Carl, taking up positions right off the Korean Peninsula, the means of inflicting this is being put in place. So this is not a minor matter or an idle threat. These are two nuclear-armed countries. Washington launching a war against North Korea is no small matter. The politicians of the two parties are lined up for it, and I don't think we have to look too far to see the pretext that will be provided for acting out this devastating scenario. John Bolton is the Bush administration's ambassador to the United Nations. He said, the way to end North Korea's nuclear weapons program is to end North Korea. Topple the government, militarily smash the country. This is a statement at the UN. Trump's talk is being ancillary to the military declarations of what they have in mind. And the chief foreign affairs columnist of the Financial Times wrote that if Kim Jong-un concludes that the U.S. is poised to attack, he will be attempted to take some action himself. U.S. warplanes are already lined up to kill North Korean leadership, this writer writes. The same U.S. Special Operations Unit that carried out the assassination of Osama bin Laden are carrying out these same exercises now in South Korea. So I don't think we have reason to doubt the gravity of what is being set up for us here, and we have to pay very careful attention to the full meaning of it, because it will not be minor. One of the problems that goes along with this is that the South Koreans are being induced to set up a TAD operation, which allows for a first strike. It's called the TAD, which the U.S. claims is designed to defend against North Korean missiles, but China has already stated as a means of assuring that the U.S. has a nuclear first strike capability against China. So I just want to emphasize for us that we're used to the bellicose rhetoric and the masturbatory declarations of a buffoon like Trump, but they're not just astonishing the declarations of imbecilic aggression. They're backed by the lunacy of imperialism as it works out its threats to humankind, and I think they're concrete and something we need to address.
Yes, I see that. But I also look at the situation where Trump is trying to save his presidency from failure. He failed on the health plan. He failed on the jobs. I believe he's just bluffing, or as we the young people say in the community, selling wolf tickets to take people's minds off of the promises he made at home, that he cannot keep. This Obama, the Affordable Care Act, was a third or a quarter of what people wanted. And he can't take that back. And it's as hard as he tries. The people in the red states are beginning to understand. Now, the question will be, is racism more important to people than health care or water? And this is what we may see in Atlanta this evening. In a district north of Atlanta, we have the Trump proxy running against the Democrat proxy, who has no history. That is the Democratic proxy. And the question is, are people tired enough of Trump to take or to vote or to support someone with no background, just with a different label? I think the country is watching. I'm watching to see what the two political parties are dealing with. And we will see. We will see. And I invite others to chime in to tell us what they think, that a prediction, if you will.
The mics are open if anyone would like to jump in on this.
I think Zach Lorenzetti would just boycott the election.
Okay, that is a rationale. People have boycotted the election, and that is a vote. When people say it, nothing changes. But people want health care. I don't know if this happened. I'm getting some echo.
Yeah.
Somebody's mic is open.
Somebody's mic is doing that. We're going to have to cut down on the mics to cut the echo back. I think it's been cut back. And so this becomes the issue. Will people continue to support their anti-immigrant status their anti-immigrant posture, their racist posture, in spite of everything? Will people cut off their nose to spite their faces? This is what we're looking at in America today.
All right, your mics are open. Is there anyone else that would like to contribute at this point? If we hear an echo, we will have to close
the mic. Tyreek is here.
All right,
tell us
what you think.
Well, I'm thinking that the people will cut off their nose to spite their face and that sort of thing, unless they we have to bring to them a very good discussion of the issues in order for them to change their minds, barring that they are not subjected to extensive training. We have to really bring a good discussion to them for them to do the right thing, and I foresee that the authorities are going to prevent us from having access to the people to bring to them a good, logical, sane discussion. And so we will be prevented from really changing their minds.
Yes, well, that's what we call corporate media. They've been doing that for a long time. And
yeah.
They have been very successful at doing this.
Yeah.
But the question is, will reality impose itself on people in terms of the economy, jobs, healthcare, et cetera? We know that people, I think it was back in 1960, the middle class paid 40% of the tax burden. Today, the middle class and the poor carry 47% of the tax burden. And so you see it is getting worse day by day, and the people haven't revolted yet. They use the same old, what is that, divide and conquer. Racism, classism, sexism, it is still working, but it is backfiring in Europe. When you see that the British Brexit, and they want out of the economy, but it's on racism, nothing else. So we're going to see if people do it again. Ralph, what do you have to say about that?
Well, actually, I have a different estimate of Brexit, Ralph. The rank-and-file Labour Party and Corbyn and such were opposing the European Union's relentless exploitation that was imposed upon not only workers in Scotland or in Wales, but also England itself. It's not a question of yielding to the demagogy about immigrants that induces people to want to scrub the European Union with its financialization of all aspects of the economy, and the concentrated attack, as you see with Germany's assault on Greece, which the European Union is intensely administering, which has bankrupted that country and is aimed at all of the worker populations of the member states. The same phenomenon exists in France. It's not only those who are using immigrant issues as a rationale for attacking the European Union. It's those who want to identify the financial slavery that the European Union imposes on its nominal member states that are animating the opposition to remaining in the European Union, because it bespeaks the prospect of a struggle on the part of rank-and-file workers for a different politics in their own country and escaping the demands of the European Union and its impositions on its nominal member states. So that can't be ignored here. It's a powerful element. They attempt to ascribe the motivation on the part of those who support Brexit as opposition to immigrants of color. That is a marginal component of the opposition to Brexit that animated worker resistance to the European Union. It's deployed by the defenders of these politics in order to conceal the basic radical character of the worker resistance that's unfolded across Britain and many parts of Europe, particularly in France, and certainly, of course, the victim countries that are most powerfully affected, like Greece. So that is an important element to keep in mind, and it pertains as well, I think, Ralph, to conditions here in the United States, because the realities are that the Trump apparatus that talks about America first and sanctioning workers who have been supposedly exploited by those who don't care about them. Everybody that can see with eyes in their head recognizes that he's putting into power in these places the capitalists with the most naked association with the huge banks, and he's scrapping all the most tepid and reformist protections that have been induced by the Democratic Party in preceding years to temporize the response of working people to their exploitation. Now there's no masking it. It's all being scrubbed in the name of America First. That fascist agenda won't sell, because it's a matter of a very short term before the real consequences of that play out for working people, which they can't get into a hospital, they can't get any kind of medical care, they can't get survival wages, and the removal of the restrictions that have been imposed on capitalist extreme exploitation will put their heads under in a way they've never experienced before, and that will reflect itself in resistance, I'm sure. Massive resistance that will, its main task, in my judgment, is not so much the Trump agenda, but the Democratic Party and its Central Intelligence Agency components that tries to capture the response to Trumpism and give it a very imperialist and capitalist direction. That's what's going to go down the tubes. I think we're heading for a real crisis for the system. The financialization of capital can't meet the most elementary needs of people, and all the rhetoric of this fascist character won't conceal that reality. So I'm much more sanguine about the prospects of a worker fight back that encompasses working people of every shade.
I think a worker fight back would be a general strike. And this general strike that seemed to be taking place by most immigrants has not happened. And so, yes, Fight Back must come, and I'm looking to support it and enjoy it. Sister Betty?
I just want to remind people that Brother Larry had a very interesting discussion with some of his political so-called representatives, and I hope next week he'll chime in and review that with us, especially as to how Bernie Sanders plays into this attempt to get in front of a workers' movement, mm-hmm. to get in front of an uprising. And lastly, I want to remind people that many of our political prisoners were supporting the Freedom for South Africa, and we know what it made for South Africa, even in its limited, crippled state, to win its freedom with the solidarity with Cuba. That lesson will not be lost on the world, and I think this is the role our political prisoners play. And I want to thank Richie for showing how they do not compromise and how we can win. And on that note, I want to remind people, April 22nd, 3 to 7, St. Peter's Church. April 24th, Monday, the courts in Philly. Good night, everybody.
Thank you, Ralph. Thank you, Larry. Your brothers and sisters. This time next.
I wish I knew how to put feet.